shuffle.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill shuffle.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 99 of Kill Shuffle.
Howdy.
I'm Donald.
I'm Dylan.
And like a delicious ice cream, that reference is only going to make sense to Irish people, right? 99
yeah,
ice cream?
Yeah. Which is not actually 99 cent anymore.
It used to be 99p at one point. No, I think both Dylan and I are too young to remember that time, but in Irish punts, you used to be able to get a delicious, what they call Mr. Whippy or soft serve ice cream with a Cadbury's flake stuck in the top for 99p.
Yeah, you know what? I remember it because they don't update the sign postage.
Oh, that's true.
Like the P is still there on the currency.
That's true. But yeah. These days they'll run you about 250.
Yeah.
Easily, right? Yeah.
Easily. I could do with one of them.
Oh, man. It's actually a lovely day outside. I'm thinking I might stroll down to the seaside and get a 99. But anyway, this is episode 99. And we'll be talking about some new albums from Architects, Maximo Park, Neon Bunny, and Chevelle, as well as a look back at Tracy Chapman's 1988 self-titled debut album.
What an album to bring in. Not to spoiler off, but like, what do I expect from Donald to throw in the pot every time? And it's never what he chooses.
I am trying to mix it up, I gotta say. I'm trying to mix it up this year, and we'll talk about it later. But no, this is the show where we review albums, simple as that. But sometimes we like to talk about news up at the top of the show, and I don't know about you, Dil, there's really only one piece of news, music-wise, that I think is worth talking about this week, and it feeds into our album reviews, which is that after a sort of heated battle that got down to the wire, Architects got a number one album with For Those That Wish to Exist in the UK, which is a gigantic achievement.
Well deserved.
And Maximo Park got their second number two album.
Well deserved.
So I just thought that was a really good news story. I mean, it's fun to imagine that when people are looking back over the chart history in the UK, that they'll see one week Mogwai, As the Love Continues, number one, and then the following week Architects, For Those That Wish to Exist.
Both
albums in and around the hour mark, which is very long, and also both push the boundaries in their own way. I think on Mogwai you've got these really long, really involved songs, and then on Architects, obviously you've got guttural screams. It's really nice to see the public embrace these bands, and of course Maximo Park, near and dear to my heart.
You can tell the fans are longing for that music, and this is the chance they have to support their artists because we can't go to their gigs.
Yeah,
so we have to do it this way, and it shows in the charts.
It does. It for sure does. Right. Yeah. And also you've got two bands. I mean, all three of those bands have had a very different trajectory to the charts, because Mogwai, it's been an excruciatingly slow climb over the years from from basically nothing all the way through to number one this year. For Architects, it's really more of a quick climb in the grand scheme of things, because they had been a band for a lot less time than Mogwai, but they still kind of built and built and built. Whereas for Maximo Park, it was like first album, Mercury Music Prize, got into the, I think got into the top, maybe the top 15.
Yeah.
Second album, capitalized on that, number two, and then ever since then it had been a little bit of a slow slide back down into humble territory.
And I don't know if this has to do with anything with preference, but there's always been a bias against instrumental bands crawling up.
Being
noticeable at all, really. You need to really just keep at it and just be that kind of special that they are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's an uphill battle for instrumental bands, no question about that. It's just not what anyone is used to. People don't.
Everybody's there for the vocalist, to be honest.
My mum once said, I was like, oh, this is a great song or something. I can't even remember, but some music was playing. I was like, oh, this is a great
melody.
Song. She's like, well, there's no singing. It's not a song. And I was like, what? It's like, the word song comes from the verb to sing. It's a piece of music. I was like, okay, I take your very pedantic point, but this is a song,
Sing a sang.
Language evolves, instrumental bands write songs. Sorry for you. So we've tons to get through. These are some meaty records this week, so why don't we get started, Dil?
We shall.
All right, so For Those That Wish to Exist is the
ninth.
For those ready to rock, we salute you. The ninth studio album from Architects. It's hard to say where you put them, but at this point, it's sort of like pan modern metal. I would say like they've been tech metal, they've been metalcore, they've been. Yeah.
Go with the times.
Yeah, they do. They evolve and they adapt. And that's what we like to see. Still, you know, in the wake of the loss of Tom Searle.
Yeah.
I think, brother of Dan Searle, the drummer, who was the guitarist and primary songwriter for the band. And I bring that up so early on because this album is, I would say, the first
without a
product. That is entirely 100% top down. Sam, Alex, Dan, Adam, and Josh all working together, on the music without the help of Tom's leftover riffs, etc., etc. So that is a news story in and of itself, because Holy Hell from a few years ago, which you and I both really liked, I think.
I was middling about it, but I still enjoyed what I experienced, because I like metal.
Yeah, I thought that was a very, very good album. But this is a different beast, and it's quite a long and involved record. It comes in just shy of the hour mark, and there are, it's 15 tracks, and none of them you would really describe as interludes, except maybe the first one. There were it's kind of 14 proper songs, and just right off the top, it is a lot to take in. But I would say that it's largely highly successful.
I think it's an album of two halves of a coin.
Okay.
Of my enjoyment. Mm-hmm. Straight off the bat, I think the second half is a lot stronger with experimentation and just sounding a little different in the metalcore scene. I think the first half for me is good. It's very good. It's very strong off the bat as an entity. But I think it borrows from things we've heard from bands who do this and soundtracks that do this, a la the Doom soundtrack or While She Sleeps or just kind of what's the other band?
I was going to say the elephant in the room, guys. It's Bring Me the Horizon.
Bring Me the Horizon. Yes, yeah, exactly
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
More
yeah,
so
yeah.
Bring Me the Horizon with tendencies of having electronics as little interludes and stuff. And it's definitely a kind of, you're playing bingo with metalcore, but it's still very strong, right?
Yeah, I think I don't think that's too harsh. They're working with Parallax Orchestra, who most recently did the strings and orchestration on Ammo, and I think
that makes sense.
I definitely get echoes of Ammo on Do You Dream of Armageddon, the first track. I think Dead Butterflies has a lot of I Don't Know What to Say, which is the closing track off.
God, right? It's exactly that height of pitch of violin, right? The din din din.
Yeah, for sure. But I actually also got a little more something along the lines of Midnight Flit off the Mogwai album from Discourse is Dead. I think what this album brings to the table pretty early on, although I will say it is kind of crazy to get, however many, 5 minutes into an Architects record without a single scream. You have to wait till sort of the second half of Black Lungs before you get one. But I still think that this has more, it still comes loaded with more aggression than Bring Me have for quite a while. I think that's what sets them apart in a way, even though you can clearly tell that they are inspired by that style of songwriting. And I loved it. You and I have both discussed Bring Me quite a bit recently.
Yeah.
And I think we both really like their songwriting approach and While She Sleeps as well. So I have no issue with the similarities where some people maybe might, that kind of way.
Yeah.
I broadly agree with you about the two halves. The first half, just to finish up on that point, I think Black Lungs, there's some real sempiternalisms Do you cross your heart when you hope to die? That's very
sempiternal. Are turns of phrase that are kind of in the scene. Kind of escape that kind of thing.
Yeah. Giving Blood, I think, is probably one of just two tracks on the record that, even though I think it's good, it doesn't necessarily add a huge amount to the stew. I think Giving Blood and Meteor towards the end are both kind of just fine.
Giving Blood's got a cool kind of alarm kind of thing that I compare it to the Doom soundtrack.
Yeah, I like
There are a lot of Mick Gordon turns of phrase in the riffing, I would say, that are almost intentional. I'd be hard pressed to not believe they didn't say, let's do that.
What was the
cool
band
thing
that worked with Mick Gordon recently?
Bring Me the Horizon.
Oh, great. I was hoping it'd be somebody else so we could bring another band into the name into the mix. But yeah, no, for sure. And then sorry, the halfway mark you're talking about is probably
an ordinary extinction.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Impermanence really, really dives down on kind of a
Neue
heaviness.
Deutsche Härte, maybe?
Yes, I would say close to Thornstar.
Yeah.
There is a riffing that sounds like
Eisbrecher.
We built this church on this rock. That the first song, very industrial.
Yeah.
I love it. I really love that song.
I think Impermanence, to hear, because it's just funny, because apropos of nothing really, I was listening, because I think I was listening to it before I even realized that Winston McCall was on this record, but I was listening to Atlas by Parkway Drive a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
Oh man, so good. And then I don't know where you've got that, cause those afraid to die will never truly live, comes in and you're like, fuck, it's Winston.
It's an interesting mix, man. It really stands out. I'm glad it does. Very, very menacing song in a slow tempo that I like to see these bands doing, because I know the tempo these bands go at.
Yeah.
And a lot of the first songs on the album hit that.
Mm.
And I get tired of that a little fast because the melodies are kind of maybe not up to scratch. But this is where the album takes a turn to getting real crazy and creative.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because then, just straight up like great guest spot there from Winston McCall. Fly Without Feathers. I've pros and cons on this one. Pros?
Not really lyrically.
Okay, fair enough. I don't pay a huge amount of attention to the lyrics. I have a lyrical point somewhere towards the end, I think. But I think more so musically, I love that the drop in that song when you expect the guitarist to come in, it actually does this really lovely kind of cubby uppermost Tycho thing.
Yeah, it's a nice flourish.
It's really nice kind of modern electro drop, but it could have been 2 minutes. It's a full song. It really only needed to do the verse and chorus thing once.
I think Bring Me did a better version of this song in Ammo, if you remember correctly, their electric
Fresh Bruises, or the other one.
It was good.
Yeah.
Baby Metal have done this kind of thing as well, so you know,
to be fair,
there is on the Japanese edition of Metal Resistance, I believe they had kind of a chill track like this. And I guess that's just a bingo thing. I wish bands, what would it take for a band to not, a metalcore band these days, to not have a track like this on the album? I would say
That's a fair point.
And not a bad thing, but like
well, what I will say is, like, While She Sleeps has never done a track like this. Architects have never done a track like this before, really.
Yes, that's why I say it's a good first.
I think we're taking a lot for granted because Bring Me did it, and then everybody made fun of Bring Me because they did it, and now we're sort of taking it for granted.
Exactly.
So that kind of annoys me slightly, but little wonder. Again, it, you know, hard not to see those Bring Me comparisons, but what I will say is I love the running bass, that gunk, that kind of synth wave, Vangelis, great stuff.
Yeah. This is them combining kind of a little bit of electronic rush to their metal, and that's how you do it. Animals is an interesting one.
Love it.
It's fucking heavy. It really is.
Yeah. It's like Architect Stein.
Oh, yeah, it is, actually.
Yeah, it's I'm not the first one to. I did think it the second I heard the song in the live stream, but then the chat was like, "Oh my god, it's Rammstein!"
More slow to mid tempo stompers.
Yeah, but what a brilliant riff! I mean, you know, some of the riffs that Architects come out with. I mean, you know, the last one that absolutely blew me away was Doomsday off the last record. That and then this one off Animals is just, it's great in the same way that something like, is it Silver, is that the name of the song by Gojira?
Oh yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's great in that really simple kind of like it's almost kind of like a death march kind of thing. I love it.
I would say the riffs on this are a little bit more simple than you'd see from like Bring Me lately.
Who don't even lean into riffs as much as they. I know Posthuman did, but definitely this to me is more like towards Latter Day Korn or something, like very much kind of more new metal.
That's a good call. I would say I wish it was a bit hookier at points. It's a bit hard in metalcore to sometimes really get the hooks in that don't sound like something else already.
He has a bit of a book of carpet samples when it comes to like vocal melodies. There's no getting around that. And it's something that we talk about with tons of artists. It is by no means unique.
There's a group vocal metalcore tendency. That kind of is here.
Would you apply it to? I wouldn't necessarily say that it covers all metalcore. I just think that Sam Carter has like some kind of go to. Melodies that his voice go, and I would say that like the dude from Black Peaks is similar, or you know, I don't think it's not unique to
Irving Walsh Sleeps for an extent. That could be so many things, and I didn't even pick that from anything in particular.
Yeah, although I think that's the start of. Do you cross your heart when you hope to die?
I guess it is. Yeah,
that's Black Lung. But you're absolutely right. That you know, there is a particular take on. Melody that and I understand why it would be, you would be more likely to have something like that in a genre like this, because you don't want anything to ever sound too major or too overly melodic.
I go to Devin Townsend.
Yeah, see, those are the Devin tracks that I don't necessarily click on as much, but I hear you.
A lot of artists can make it very interesting, as we may hear later.
Who's someone that can and has form for a very fresh take on melody around heavy songwriting? It's Simon Neil from Biffy Clyro, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, holy shit, dude. He still has it. He still got that that early. He still kept that scream in a jar from 15 years ago.
Well,
I guess
that's the thing. Everyone's like, "Oh, why doesn't Simon do screaming anymore?" Okay, I will give you. I'll give you. Okay, the bonus track off Ellipsis, which, as incredible as it is, in the name of the Wee Man, lots of great screaming on that. But he screamed his guts out on Cop Syrup on the new album, Celebration of Endings. But I've never heard him do a metallic performance before. And my God, does it suit his voice.
It really does. At some parts it sounded very jarring.
Yeah.
Because he can fully do it. Surprised he hasn't done this before. I almost wish Simon Neil was their actual vocalist. I don't know. It's just a new thing. It's a really cool new thing.
I love the way he comes in with that. They had used that effect on Tunnels and Trees off Balance Not Symmetry, but that kind of distorted and he comes in with the snakes coiling, all that good stuff, and then that massive scream. It's just great
torch pass in that song.
Great torch pass and really cool, like again sort of Gojira inspired riff on that song,
but it's very Gojira.
But sort of does their own thing with the chorus. Awesome stuff. Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a, I'll be honest with you, from Goliath, I think it's a little bit of a slow ramp to the end.
I think Demigod's pretty good.
Demigod is cool.
I'd say Meteor is very good, actually.
Would you? Yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, there's something about that GIF that's playing on the Spotify that just personifies what the song's doing.
I turned them off. I should have a little look, but I don't
it's
like
just
this.
This guy on fire looks like he's flying through a volcano. It's pretty fucking nuts. I get that.
Yeah. I do like that I got some Trivium vibes at the start of that song, I gotta say.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably what I liked a lot about it.
Yeah, but then I don't think the rest of the song, like, yeah. It's fine. And then Dying is absolutely safe, the last track. I absolutely get what they're going for. It's the strumming in particular, actually, speaking of Trivium, reminded me of that, you know, the end of everything, the song that kicks off Ascendancy. But it ends really well. It ends really, really well. But I think it goes for too long.
Yeah, it does. I have another thing about a metalcore band talking about the pandemic lyrically that I'm sick of already.
Okay.
I know it's just, that's life. We're singing about life, and it happens in every genre we'll talk about.
Yeah.
But there's certain things that metalcore artists talk about with the pandemic that it's just a given. It's another point on the bingo.
Are you talking about when he says, I think the only thing, because I wasn't like, I'm not super clued into the lyrics, but he says like living in quarantine.
Directly reference quarantine and pandemic, I was like, I think Devin mentioned it before.
Yeah.
The reason he's taking so long to do the album he's doing now is because he doesn't want to talk. He doesn't want to sing about what we've been through.
Yeah, I get you.
Be a bit more creative with stuff. Like, there has to be more points of life that we can talk about or reminisce about.
A whole album. But I hear you.
There's a lot of references.
Okay, no, fair enough.
I think it's natural, but it's a hard thing to escape. So I'm not holding it against him at all. Yeah,
I do think on that track I could really do without the marching band snare. That's the only thing I will say. I feel like don't need to hear another song where the inspiring bit has that or whatever. That's fair. Just rubs me up the wrong way for some reason. It's fine, right? Apparently, it has Liam from Black Peaks on it.
Interesting.
I don't know where.
Maybe that.
Yeah. Maybe not. Sorry, Liam. Lovely work on the snare there. But yeah, overall, I will say, just like general points, I think it was actually a really smart idea to get Parallax Orchestra in, because I think the orchestrations are excellent.
Terrific. Yeah, they shine as they really always do. They're a go to. If you're thinking about doing this, go to them. If you don't want to sound like really anybody else, go to someone else.
Oh, yeah. I'm always here for some brass, and I think the brass on Dead Butterflies is excellent. I love the experimentation on An Ordinary Extinction. Like, it kind of, it starts off like the Prodigy, but then whoever it is, if it's Josh or Adam, it actually starts to mimic the arpeggiator with the guitar line, which you don't actually hear all that often.
It's really good.
So you've got the arpeggiator then the guitar is going fucking ham, playing the same line. And then it goes into this sort of Deftones style middle eighth, which is just like real kind of washes of chords and a really lovely melodic part from Sam. And I think people are sort of downplaying a little bit how much of an evolution this is for Sam Carter vocally. And I know some people don't like him or whatever, but as somebody who's main criticism of Architects, and I've loved Architects, I've been on board with Architects literally since Hollow Crown, which I suppose is like Architects' version of Puzzle or whatever. Yes, there are sort of albums before that, but Hollow Crown was the first one that most folks got into them through. So I've kind of watched their evolution all the way through, and I've loved everything they've done. I'm probably one of the few people who actually really likes the Here and Now, I will say, which is considered a massive misfire, and they tried to go melodic too early, and it just ended up sounding wet and soggy and all sorts. And I actually think it's quite good, and I like it.
Fair.
But I've heard but then they kind of had this knee-jerk reaction on Daybreaker, where they went back to like super 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 heavy, like no singing, just like all screams and stuff. But I've always wanted a little bit more variety, and they were peppering it in with every new album, more melodic parts. And then Sam was leaning really heavily on this pitched scream thing that he does. Just to give you an example, on he does a version of it on An Ordinary Extinction. Do you know that seize the stage? I'm doing a terrible job of it, but he kind of pitches his screams high, and he was doing that for a couple of albums. That was his singing kind of, but I think he's a really quite a versatile singer, and here you hear him, he does all the kind of points on the spectrum of clean singing, and he does gutturals, he does like really great kind of normal screams on this album. I think it's a great showcase for his voice. I gotta say, I think I love it.
I don't hate it.
Yeah,
it's good. It works. You know, it doesn't blow me away, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
because so many bands of this genre have already done that in quick succession the last year almost. I'm fine with it, you know. It does its due diligence.
I was just gonna throw my hat there in the ring and say that I think Sam Carter has shown one of the biggest evolutions I think of a vocalist in this scene. He does not rely on just doing the same old thing, even though we might think that he has a, you know, that he kind of draws from similar melody lines. I think the actual technique of his voice is really impressive. So that's just moi, but I think I've probably said all I have to say about it.
Same. I'm enjoying this. I enjoy half of it a lot. I like the first half. It's all right.
I think I like it a little bit more than you. Curious what your favorite song is.
I know what you're gonna pick. I'll pick something else.
You might not be correct, but go ahead. Let's try it.
Fuck. Then what if we don't choose that one?
Go. One of us has to. Just go for it. Do or dare. Do or die.
Okay. It's gonna be Impermanence for me.
Oh. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, you see, you've put me on the spot now. Goliath. Mm-hmm.
Good man. Good choice.
Okay. That was close though.
I want to see Simon Neil do heavy stuff more often like this. I mean, maybe he just doesn't want to do it because screaming is a bitch on the throat.
Nah.
It can be.
It can be. But I don't
know. The way he does it, he just lets it rip.
Ugh. Yeah, he. I've heard him talk about screaming in interviews. He loves it. It's appropriate. But I think Simon Neil has a black metal project coming out in a couple of months. So keep your eyes peeled.
Oh my god!
Like legit, he's been working on so much stuff. I've almost lost track. But there's exactly like a new Marmaduke Duke album. There's another Biffy album coming out of the tracks. Sure he's working on something that's in the metal space with Mike Venart, I think. So don't quote me on that, but I think he is. Okay, well, like I say, my favorite track is Goliath, and I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10.
I will give this a 7. Very, awesome. Very worthy 7.
All right.
Yeah.
Excellent stuff.
Uh-huh.
So that is For Those That Wish to Exist, the new number one album. Do you see, we're doing number one. See, okay, the number one album from Architects. And our number two album is the number two album.
Yes.
Nature Always Wins by Maximo Park.
Yay.
From Newcastle. So this is their seventh record. It's kind of wild to think. I think of Architects as a much newer band. They're only 4 years on the scene. Like, they're only four. Maximo Park is only on the scene 4 years longer than Architects. And Architects have 9 albums and Maximo Park have 7. Yeah, I think of them as the elder statesmen. Yeah. It's kind of funny. So Maximo Park, just to give you a very, very, very potted history, because I don't think we've covered them on the show before. Am I right in saying that?
I thought we almost did.
For an album club. Let me research that. We might have done a time machine on them.
Because the name's familiar, and thus I'm probably familiar.
I talk about them all the time because they've been kind of near and dear to me for many, many years. But I'm gonna take a punt and say I don't think we've covered them before, and I know we haven't covered a new album because their last album, Risk to Exist. Even though I thought it had some absolutely brilliant singles, I didn't think overall as an album it was. Yes, you're absolutely right. We covered Our Earthly Pleasures, their second record, back in October of 2018. So well remembered. It's been it's been a while.
Two and a half years.
So yeah, that was their number two. That was the one that got to number two before.
Oh wow! Okay.
So yeah, so we liked that. So basically, they burst onto the scene in 2005 with A Certain Trigger, which won the Mercury Music Prize and did quite well for them, and it's considered their classic. And I broadly agree, but I think that second album, Earthly Pleasures, is also a 10 out of 10, and I think their third record, Quick in the Heart, is probably like a 9.5. And there's another album after that that's probably like a 9, and then for a few years there was one album called Too Much Information, which I stopped paying attention, and I just thought it was really badly produced. I thought the songs just were not there, and so I only kind of tentatively got into a couple songs off the last record, 2017, and this one I was curious to see where they would go and whether they would do that thing that bands sometimes do after a big change in sound, which is where they go back and they draw from the best bits of their previous career. And I'll let you speak now, but I think that is probably what they're doing on Nature Always Wins. They're drawing from various parts of their back catalogue to largely very successful ends.
Yes. Yes, they do. Even from my small knowledge of the one we covered,
yeah,
they do that.
Yes.
And they give us a very nostalgic flourish. I think this is their best record, I would say.
Oh, wow.
I would say, or at least most ambitious.
It covers a lot of ground. It definitely covers lot of ground. That's great. I'm so glad you like it.
It does. Yeah, yeah. Fucking very much surprised me on many points, right?
Yeah, there's lots of surprises. I think when they go into that more, I mean, you know, the first track, Partly of My Making, I think is good. It's a good opener. There's kind of a high note that that Paul Smith, I don't think, quite nails. But what I will say is it's lovely to hear Gemma, who is the new backing vocalist. I think she does a really lovely job throughout the record. And it's so interesting to hear a female voice, because you've never heard that really. I mean, there's been like tiny bits here and there, but she's pretty much there throughout. And that's a really cool new something in the mix. So I think that's a good start. But I think when it really hits its stride is Versions of You, that second song, because that combines the sort of more mature take on their sound from their third album, but it also brings in this kind of
the fun,
The Cure meets the Gaslight Anthem or something. Like, there's a real
Gaslight. It's got that that real Midwestern Americana mixed with
Bruce Springsteen type thing.
And a bit of the fun punk elements that you've heard from Against Me, maybe points. There's like a good party atmosphere to that.
Definitely,
And something 80s. There's something from the 80s in there too. Maybe a bit of Duran.
Yeah.
Duran, to an extent.
Tons, there's lots of 80s. I mean, All of Me, that kind of lead keyboard part. Very 80s.
Yes.
There's one something towards the end that has a real kind of New Order feel to it as well, I think. Meeting Up, which again... What a great
one.
Like Paul Smith lyric, you know, the late laughter of the lonely echoes through the renovated hallways in a town that I thought I'd forgotten where the hairdressers' names are not their real names.
Exactly. That's getting creative with weird shit going on in the pandemic. I would say like they get weird as well. The acid remark sounds like a Tin Machine or David Bowie kind of take.
Absolutely, but it's got this kind of surf rock solo in the middle, which was very surprising.
It's a very unusual song.
Yeah,
I'm glad there's unusual songs here, because there's a lot of like real catchy, timeless songs here. All of Me, of course. Placeholder, Visions of You. There's so many. Why Must a Building Burn?
Must a Building Burn?
I can literally go down the list. Perhaps not Baby Sleep.
I think it starts. Like Baby Sleep. Okay, so it kicks in, and I'm like, okay, like I like that kind of guitar tone. It's got a real kind of heft to it. But
yes,
then
it does.
I think they really commit to that chorus, that baby Yoli. And I don't think it's as strong as they think it is.
No, it's not.
They seem to have picked that one out. Like, they gave it a really long, I watched their live stream, and they gave it a really long preamble and all this kind of stuff. And I was like,
it gets to me a little bit.
I don't know if that's the one, lads. And I will say, last thing is on All of Me, even though I think it's musically a strong song. I think which is never an issue for Maximum Park usually, but I think the lyrics and maybe slightly the production let it down. I think
I like it. I love it.
Good. Good.
I'm really glad. The best one.
Oh, okay. There you go.
for the certain slices of 80s that it does choose, and I'd say at points it kind of feels. Some of these songs feel very Electric Six. They like that genre as well. They grew up in the 80s as well, I'd assume.
I'm just thinking about this. They have a song called The National Health, right, which is a single off their fourth album. But that, the more I think about it now, it's kind of got a punk feel to it, but it's very Electric Six. I'm imagining, like, what's his name, Dick Valentine.
Dick Valentine.
I'm imagining his voice on it. I'm like,
crooning to it. With a bit more of a rocky edge. But there's a drive. There's that kind of party drive that I come to Electric 6 for that this has
or
as well.
Or an harder, like, I kill you. He's like, yeah, it's easier said than done. You can imagine him, you know.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah. But Pauline Murray from Penetration, gotta say, I put my hand up. I had not heard of her, but it's a fun performance.
Yes, it is. I like her element to it, right?
She's kind of like one of the punk queens of Durham.
Yeah, it's got a nice build to it, her part. Yeah. Yeah, really cool part.
I have to go back to the what I kind of think of the like brooding sort of post-punk songs I think are my favorites. The like Meeting Up, I really love how dark and sort of just threatening that song is. It kind of reminds me of like Editors when they went a bit weird on like the third record.
That's a good pick.
Yeah, and then that feeling kind of feeds into the last song, Child of the Flatlands, which is just, again, it kind of paints a picture. And Backstreet Boys are great at doing this because Paul Smith just has this really kind of, it's definitely kind of a street poetry type, not in like a Mike Skinner way, but like I think he's able to spin these more like a Patrick Kavanagh kind of way. I think like he's able to spin these grand visions out of extremely ordinary things, and you know, talking about like, you know, the chimneys stretching off into the distance, and the, you know, the horses are bolting and the islands revolting and all this kind of stuff about it's to do with those weird areas around industrial towns in England where, you know, there's nature and industry are sort of clashing. And it's just a lovely song. And was then it's
was this a pre-pandemic or post or mid or during pandemic album?
I believe I remember seeing on Paul's Instagram that he was starting recording in lockdown. I think this is a full pandemic recording.
That's great process. Because it doesn't dwell on anything turmoil that we already just experienced in the last album, right?
Although, would you not say that on Ardor there's that kind of like,
oh, okay,
I'm scrolling
in
my sleep, pinch, grab a magazine, like that kind of has a little bit of a. To be fair, though, I think a lot of these songs could just as easily refer to like domesticity and being kind of a new dad and all that kind of stuff.
I see that you know, a lot of different new territory to talk
about.
It's
interesting versions of you too, because I really thought that song was. He's talked about the line that he used before, which was like the brevity of sensation. And he kind of, a lot of Maxio Park songs kind of talk about like the bittersweet nature of something that you might only have for a moment. I kind of thought Versions of You was maybe about like a partner who you're kind of worried that you'll never quite remember them the right way, or that you'll never quite have like an accurate picture of who they are. But it's actually, well, I think it's actually about his daughter and all of the various like versions of his daughter growing
whatever
up that
you
he has
want it to be
archived in his phone and all this kind of stuff. But it's cute, like it's a cute kind of thing. And I love that line, I can only call to mind the way you look at the present time. Yeah, that's quite nice.
I mean, I like so many parts of All of Me. I'm just going back to it.
Go for it.
Like just kind of the part near the mid section lyrically or vocally where he goes kind of up a notch, falsetto kind of open mouth singing.
Unusual for him.
Yeah, I like that. It really changes what was already going on in the song quite a bit, which is nice. It was very fucking catchy, this album, dude. It really is.
It is. It's super catchy. Yeah, they've just... They kind of veered into like disco territory on their last album, which at times was really successful. At times was not
like
successful at all.
The way like you dance to an 80s Bruce Boss album. Same for this, right?
Definitely. Yeah, I think they've gone back to doing what they do really well, and to hear like to be able to pick out songs like we've done with artists in recent memory where we were able to pick out. I can say very confidently that like Versions of You sounds like something from Quick in the Heart, Placeholder sounds like something from Our Earthly Pleasures, and I Don't Know What I'm Doing sound actually for the first time in I think since A Certain Trigger, the first one, sounds like a song off A Certain Trigger, which is wild, you know. And apparently he was like, oh, I could only do like one take of that song before I blew my voice out, and I'm sort of go have a chat with Sam Carter. But it's very good. It is. It's so nice to hear this band back on form. Yeah. And actually, Riot Act have reviewed it, which is I was very sad actually, and, sure. and not to throw shade or whatever, but they were talking about the chart battle last week, I think, and
yeah.
Stephen Hill had kind of mentioned that Maximo Park in quite a dismissive way, like in sort of a who listens to them anymore kind of, or like how are they even relevant anymore hacks kind of way. And it's nice to see that they're actually on the slate for this week's show. I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm hoping that they give it a fair shake, because when you haven't heard from a band, or if you're like a casual music fan and a band's name crops back up, I think it's easy to be cynical, but most this of the time it is worth listening to, you know?
Yeah, this is a band having a new wind, I guess. Yeah, I love how it ends as well. A really, really interesting ending that doesn't sound like a typical ending song.
No, but then at the same time, I think it has the epic feel of a closer. But I totally see
really
what
cool
you mean.
Synthy kind of bits.
A little George Harrison reverse guitar solo as well.
Yes, one of my favorite bits.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, I like how this goes, right? Very little to dislike.
Yeah, yeah. There's a couple of songs that don't hit quite as hard for me. I think, like you mentioned, Baby Sleep. All of Me doesn't, I mean, it might just be a thing of like getting used to.
That's fucking absurd not liking that song.
I like it, but I how Ben has approached the production, who by the way like produced Haiku from Zero by Cook Copy among other things, and I love that album.
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
But I think for me it has a ever so slight hint of a saggy middle, but I still think it begins and ends really strongly, and it's good. Yeah,
I might have to go back to that just to see what happens, but I think yeah.
Oh no, I think it's really good. I think we're going to give it the same score anyway.
Yeah, sure.
So so my favorite track is, oh gosh, probably Why Must a Building Burn.
Yes, I could almost agree with that. I'd say All of Me is my favorite.
All of Me, yeah.
And I'm giving this a 9.
Excellent. Wow. Yeah. So this is another like, yeah, we've had a few of these.
It could stay. You may see it in a top 20 somewhere down the line. Awesome. In a different lifetime.
That is so great to see. And another turn up for the books, I'm probably going to give this an 8.
Whoa, okay.
I cannot, wow.
This hit me very well. I needed an uplifting album. This was exactly that.
Boom, right there. Nature Always Wins by Maximo Park. Yet again, Dylan has taken like a duck to water to one of my favorite bands, which is always nice to see. Okay, so that's Maximo Park. Nature Always Wins.
Yes.
And I feel like we're all winners here, so that's well worth checking out.
How about the next one? Can I choose this one?
Moving right along. Of course you can.
Can we go for old Chevelle? Old reliable Chevelle.
Old Chevelle.
So Narratas. Yeah. Narratias by... Narratius? I don't know.
It's not. I don't think it's supposed to.
Sounds
Narratius.
Like a Hamlet character. Narratius.
It stands for. Get ready, folks. Nothing is real. This is all a simulation.
Oh, that's a familiar kind of title.
Yes, it is.
You know, yeah. But yeah. This is their new album. This is
Illinois. The you see now. I think this is because of the Georgia Senate runoff races. But I've been like trained to pronounce this name Leffler, but I think. The boys pronounce it Loeffler. So Pete and Sam Loeffler brothers. Yeah. They used to play with their brother, their other brother. There was three brothers, but then one of the brothers left, and then there was somebody else in the band, and then they left. So that's just the two.
Difficult kind of coasting getting to this point from the last album. Yeah. And I think back in 2018, I was like, holy shit, they have a new song out. Oh, it's for a B-side. I remember saying that specifically to you, and you enjoyed that song quite a bit.
I have no memory of that, but I'm sure I did.
It was Sleepwalking Elite off the B-side. Okay. And I believe that was 4 years ago. But anyway. Yeah.
Well, listen, Dale, this is a Chevelle, right? I will say that they weren't necessarily up on my radar, but they're it's an interesting band to read about Chevelle, because they have like platinum records from the early 2000s.
Oh fuck yeah, right.
And like songs that did really well on MTV. This album has a glittering production team, I will say, because like on the production side you've got Joe Barresi, who most recently engineered Tool or Too Proud to say that he produced Fear Inoculum, right?
Whoa.
So we've got Fear Inoculum, you've got Avenged Sevenfold, Every Time I Die, Soundgarden, Coed and Cambria, and he fucking produced Lullabies to Paralyze by Queens of the Stone Age. On the one side, on the mastering side, you've got Bob Ludwig, who is like the anti-Ted Jensen in that he's the other go-to Grammy Award winning mastering engineer who doesn't brick wall everything, and you don't need to know about any of his work except that he mastered Random Access Memories. I close the case. So this is so you've got two of the world's best sort of on the technical side, right? And then you've got a band that have form and quite a bit of history in terms of chart success, and they've got a long career.
Just to go off my history with them. I've loved them. I've been very middling about them for a while.
Okay.
But I've loved them at points, and I've always come with at least a few handfuls of songs that I didn't totally like from albums that they kind of just, I wouldn't say phoned in, but just kind of kept on a one-dimensional kind of template of Sonic stuff. Like, they keep the genre. Like, you can tell they're coming off not a new metal, but there is a certain type of rock that they're coming off of, at least earlier on in their career with Venacera. And wonder what's next. And I think for me, my favorite album was Sci-Fi Crimes in 2009.
Oh wow! Okay, so super late career, yeah.
And I guess the last album I liked was La Gargola, which is 2014, and that album was almost exclusively kind of metal screaming vocals, like barely any melodics in that. So it's been quite a while. I'd almost say an entire decade since they really got me.
Right. Okay, no, that is really interesting, because a lot of their sort of chart success and commercial success and I guess fan base building was kind of around that. What's next, or what's that album called? What's coming next?
Well, yeah. What's coming next?
Yeah.
Wonder what's next.
Sorry.
So I expected kind of an album to like.
Good.
Just an album that I'd like.
Can I say two words that are going to make you absolutely furious, and the Loeffler brothers are going to roll their eyes, and everyone who likes Chevelle is going to turn off the show?
I mean, you're new to the band, so come on board. Let us judge you.
Diet Tool.
Diet Tool. I think there's a word for that.
I've said it now. It's out there. It's out there in the conversation. Hey, we can move on from it. But
it's one of their great inspirations.
My word. Pete Loeffler sound like Maynard James Keenan? I mean, yeah. It's been said before.
Guess who can still scream nowadays?
Yeah,
not Maynard.
No, it's true.
He doesn't want to.
But you hear it, right? I mean, surely you hear it.
Oh yeah, there's kind of a sincere kind of like bubbling under kind of sad melancholy to his roars and stuff. It's there. He's a real volcano of a vocalist when he wants to be, and I'm really fucking glad he brings back the melodic vocals with this album.
Yeah.
Just tries a whole load of new stuff, I guess, or at least gives a fresh wind to things.
Give us an overview. It sounds like, so would you say that this for you is a return to form?
I think it's above and beyond a return to form.
Okay, great.
Yeah. I could say without a doubt this is possibly their second best album.
Okay.
Could be their first best album at some points. Mainly because it gets very epic, right? It feels like an epic. You kind of see that with the prog rock album cover.
My goodness.
There's a bit of a like So Long Mother Earth kind of feel to stuff that kind of almost Coheed do at points, right?
It's more like Night Flight Orchestra, you know, that kind of like classic rock tribute type stuff. But yeah, I see it. It's a fun piece of artwork, no question.
Yeah, and of course the first track sounds very Tool, more so than they've ever done before. I'd say Fear Inoculum Tool.
I mean, like they lean on that, they do that like Tool rolling trill thing, or that grace note. They do that a good few times during the album. I was every time I went, oh, it's the Tool thing that.
Yeah. Of course, they're a born and bred drop D band, right?
Yeah.
So you, and if you love Tool, it's gonna show whether you like it or not. Yeah, I think true. this is the best band that can do it for me.
I know a lot of folks say Carnival, but I don't know them as well. I don't know them well enough.
No, I would say keep that away from me. And right off the bat with So Long Mother Earth, they don't sound like Tool. They sound
like Muse.
What do they sound like?
I do really like the chords in that. I think the chorus has some really interesting chord choices there. Yeah. I think the first song, it started like Tool, and then I was like, oh. And then it sort of went a little Nickelback, and then it went a bit Blackstone Cherry, and then it went kind of Soil, and I was like, oh, okay, all right. Where are we here? Yeah.
So already in the album, we're getting like different kinds of riffing, and they're not keeping to a one dimension. That's already a great sign. And I love his vocals, especially the So Long part of the So Long. I can't really do it justice right now.
I get it, yeah.
But it just soars. It fucking soars, dude. Yeah. I love it. I love the kind of hammer-on riffage there, because it's him doing the guitar and singing, so that's already kind of a hard thing to pull off.
They do lean fairly heavily on that thunderstruck, like da 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 da, like kind of hammering on and all that sort of stuff. I will say that there are certain, like, that's one of them, and the other one is like that kind of, you know, like that kind of Tool style, like deep chugging, hard rock riff,
bouncy kind of rock, hard rock,
Alice in Chains type kind of guitar tone.
You'd almost get it out of are you talking about Mars Simula?
I'm kind of talking about all the way through. I think Mars Simula has more of a, like, almost sort of a Papa Roach feel to it, to be honest with you. It's exactly got that kind of new
and
metal
every time,
bounce.
Every time I hear him say, what's the phrase in that song?
To Mars!
I just keep hearing, get your ass to Mars!
Yeah.
From
Get your Total ass Recall. To Mars.
Get your ass to Mars. Yeah. So I love that. It's a very, it's a pretty badass song. This album has a lot of really cool interludes as well that kind of have this weird, how can I explain it? It's a lot of like experimental guitar work and guttural pit like crackling of the guitar pick across the strings. Like there's kind of like a rusty bed creaking kind of sound that sounds very environmentally eerie, and I like that. It sounds very spacey.
I will say the Sleep the Deep, I like that it has the kalimba, that kind of finger plucked African instrument, but if it had, I don't feel like it does enough with it. Like it is just like sort of a kalimba in each ear, playing a little sort of tune, and
it's a very small one. It just kind of goes.
Yeah, if they'd done a bit more, I think I would have liked it more, but it's supposed to be a concept album, I think.
Yeah, it seems it. It really seems it, and I think that's good for them to do, because they can do it. They totally show here. I'm sure even if you don't like this much, you can kind of agree that makes it a little more special. It just permits more room to kind of throw in some crazy stuff. Even though they don't go too crazy, the styles of the songs are different, right?
Yeah, I mean, like Endlessly is one that's obviously something a bit different, but.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Have to admit now that they're not exactly stretching themselves. I mean, it's your standard E minor C G D chord progression with like bells and timpani, endlessly. Like inspirational.
For the chorus, some really. I mean, it's not too special that part, but they give it a good energy to it, and there's a lot of stuff going on, so it's textured. And the verse part just sounds kind of creeping and eerie. Which is a nice kind of split. I like the way. I think if the whole song was kind of like the chorus, I wouldn't like it as much. Okay. But the fact that it can split is really cool. Remember When is pretty cool.
Remember When, I think I do. It's probably my favorite song, to be honest with you. Yeah, Deftones. I actually heard a little bit of Diary by Sunny Day Real Estate, that album, like Circles or something.
Yeah.
It has like a little bit of that feeling to it, which is nice, and I was not expecting
what
that.
What do you think about Test Enough? With his vocals and the guitar doing kind of an echoey thing. I see what he was going for. I don't think I love it as much as he thinks he does. I don't know.
I wish it was more to it. Yeah, I will say that this album, just quickly, I think this album sounds like it could have teleported in directly from any time between 2004 and 2007.
Oh, that's fantastic, because no one does that these days, right? I want it back.
Fair. I get that. And it depends on how nostalgic you are for that period of like sort of heavy rock slash metal.
Very.
But like, I will say Test Enough is definitely the most Scuzz TV sounding thing. I just think it's like, I can literally see the video. It's like kind of panning over a load of people in like spiky hair and makeup, maybe sitting in a dressing room. And then, you know, like that kind of way. It's something about it feels very dated to me. I don't love that effect.
I mean, that's just him and vocals.
Yeah, but it does some cool
harmonics with very little. And I like his vocals are great. It's just really good. Different style of vocal there.
Yeah.
Ghost and Razor, what does that sound like? That sounds like something.
Alice in Chains, I said.
Yeah. I like the solo. Actually, what's one thing I really fucking like the solos in this album more than almost anything else. They're so super cool. He kind of really knows how to use the octave wah pedal.
Sure.
To create something really guttural and scraping and kind of really strikes out amongst the riffing from what is essentially a three-man band.
A two-man band, at this stage. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, touring, it's going to be three or four. I think it's always been three.
Oh, I'm sure. And I'm sure for touring. Yeah.
The bass always kind of goes, kind of brings up the fuzz drive, and the guitar kind of.
Yeah.
They make it work, even though they essentially do two guitars for most songs. You still there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, sorry. Slowed down a bit there. So I think this album just kind of ends. Lost in the Digital Woods is pretty cool, right? I wish it was an actual song.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's kind of a spoken word. It's sort of, I was like, okay, you've got like a, I hate to be, but something about this album, and particularly I got it on Lost in the Digital Woods, you know, that kind of like, Americans just thinking that everything they do like is gonna turn to gold, and I'm like, dude, I don't care enough about your poetry. Like, let's move this along. It's very, you compare, like, if you compare the spoken word in Lost in the Digital Woods to the spoken word on the track Feelings I'm Supposed to Feel by Maximo Park, it's like, it's night and day. This guy going like, and the animals will come together in the forest. It just doesn't do it for me. A lot of this, I'm not gonna kick this band. I think you can probably tell that this didn't do a huge amount for me, and I'm really glad
I'm surprised.
I'm sorry, it brings me no joy, Dill, because the first time I put it on, I was like listening to the background. I was kind of like, oh, cool, like a bit of fire in the belly. I can get into this. But the more I listen to it, the more I feel like it's very much boxed into its own little kind of American world. And it doesn't feel like the band even is aware of chances that they could take outside of their core sound. And that is what kind of turned me off it a little bit. It feels like it draws from a well of about like maximum like six influences. And something about that just rubbed me up the wrong way. I think it's not that there aren't songs that I enjoy. I think So Long Mother Earth I enjoy. Like Remember When I enjoy. But too much of it just sort of rolled by me, and I can tell that there is a very sort of strong wellspring of support for Chevelle, and even though this album doesn't seem to have been picked up by any major music outlets, I can still, on the forums and on Sputnik and all that kind of stuff, you can see that people really care about this band and they're here for this release, and it's kind of considered like a career highlight, and that's what I'm getting from you. So I even though I enjoyed listening to their earlier work a little bit in the run up to this, just to my ears, I couldn't get a huge amount of value out of this, I gotta say, for what it is. And maybe that's just my own like not being able to hear beyond the Tool comparisons, but
it's a fair take. Very much so.
I can't lie to you and say that I was absolutely obsessed.
You're coming from a fan I could only compare it to Tool in the way that the Fear Inoculum had an effect or an effect on newcomers as well. Going like, what's the big deal? I think this is kind of that as well. Where it's a big deal for Chevelle fans. Very much so.
I just would have hoped to hear
it doesn't reinvent the wheel as well, in the same respect.
Yeah, sorry, you cut out a little bit there, so I missed the end of that sentence. But I just would have hoped that a band on their ninth album would have something a little closer to a signature sound by now.
They totally fucking do. I think they're almost bringing it back. Just go to Sci-Fi Crimes, and that's kind of the thing, and hats off to the Bull.
Yeah,
That's kind of what the albums I define as their new kind of sound. And I get they're kind of plotting a bit with North Corridor. I think there are a couple of good songs on that. But that's a 10 song album that goes at like 44 minutes, and this one is quite a bit more, I think.
Yeah,
50 minutes. It's not too much more. It almost goes by a bit faster. Yeah, I think there's just it's just them hitting a concept album with their regular sound. And I guess naturally the Tool influences and Muse influences that also do prog concept albums flourish.
Absolutely. It reminds me a little bit of like, there's kind of a genre of like sort of B-side melodic death metal bands where the whole thing of them is like, remember when melodic death metal used to have screaming, and like the whole, like their bands are sort of built around, and I'm not putting this on Chevelle, but it just put me in the mindset of this, like, that there is just a group of people out there who wish that Maynard James Keenan still screamed. And it's like, even I'm not saying you're in that camp either, but it's like, oh, this is perfect because like it's got screaming on it. And then on the melodic death metal camp, it's like, oh man, In Flames have gone off the rails, or Soulworks sing too much now. But look, here's you know, Jesus Wept from Leipzig, and they still scream, and all that kind of stuff. And I can, you know, it just, your mind is just gonna have to vary. It depends on whether you connect emotionally with the music. It happened once or twice, but it didn't happen consistently enough for me to say that I could really. Yeah. Like love this album, but I'm really glad that you connected with it, and I think I can I can hear what it is about this band that people really dig. But it might just be that it's this record and this collection of songs, or this production job, whatever it is, but it didn't necessarily work for me. So
I mean, like, we hear so much of the same kind of metalcore and related stuff these days. I like having a band like this back, to be honest.
It's definitely a throwback for sure. And yeah, exactly, your fondness for that period, in that kind of mid-2000s period, is gonna dictate how much you enjoy this, I think. Do you have a favorite song on a score to 10?
Yeah, probably. You give it first.
Okay,
I'm gonna bring this up a notch.
Yeah, you can finish on a real on a real high. My favorite track is Remember When. I really like that.
Yes, I understand totally.
Yeah,
the chorus is just flies, right? Really,
yeah,
got a nice mid-tempo joy to it,
and I think his voice definitely breaks out of its comfort zone on that song. It's lovely. But you're not gonna like the score. I say this really from a place of I just think that it's average. 5 out of 10,
maybe.
That's 2.5 stars.
Disastrous.
It's not. No. It's not that I don't really dislike it, but I just don't really like it either. It sits right there in the middle for me. So
it's a little baffling.
Yeah,
I will say that. Don't understand it really.
Okay.
Good riff's a good riff. Great riff's a great riff, actually. I think my favorite is probably So Long Mother Earth.
Good song too.
Yeah, it just just keeps on going and going, and then fuck, right at the end, the scream he lets out with the same referral of So Long is just nuts. Fucking insane. It's what I come to this for, right? You know, good. It's my other Tool, I guess. I'm giving this a 9.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a 9.
Okay, that's a big old 4-point gap. Yeah. Great.
Because, well, you know, I've kind of been middling with this band for quite a while, and to see them really come back with something thoughtful, as far as an energy to their same old sound. Maybe not a totally different thing, like, I don't know, like The Used did with Heartwork. That would be interesting to see this band do something like that, though.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was tumultuous or difficult to get this album out creatively with people leaving. With
sure.
Yeah. One of the main members of the band leaving after so long. Surely not an easy thing to do, and I'm glad they kept on it. It's truly special. I don't say anything about much of this stuff, really.
It happens from time to time, but I kind of
grew out of them. That's the thing. I kind of expected the sound, same sound, and this does songwriting here is the chops are up, and that does a whole load of wonders, even for the tried and tested genre.
I don't hear it, but I'm glad you do. And that's all we can say.
I listened to it so many times as I did it. It was like
a piece of bubblegum losing its flavor.
By like three or four songs, it's there.
Listen, it's no counting for this. Just ever, you know, that's the human brain. We hear things, everything differently. So that's Nothing Is Real and Everything Is a Simulation, Nari Tyus or something, by Chevelle. And you definitely will have to sort of, this is one of those moments where you need to decide, are you a Donald or are you a Dylan? It's whether you're going to get a kick out of it, but definitely give it a go.
Don't be both.
Never be both. Okay. And then moving on to our last new album of the week, where I suspect we will be a little bit more in agreement. It's Neon Bunny, otherwise known as Lim Yoo Jin from Seoul, Korea. And this is her third record. It is called Cosmos. Remember we covered Into the Cosmos by Raki a couple weeks ago?
We did. Doesn't sound
a million miles away, actually, in the first couple tracks. But anyways, so this is kind of, I don't know if you'd call it K-pop or R&B or pop, electro. It's kind of all of the above.
It's indie dream pop that happens to belong in Korea.
Right. There you go. Absolutely. It is. It's a real mixed bag, I think, in terms of the sound that Neon Bunny goes for. Intentionally inconsistent, I would say, definitely. Like her last album we covered on the show, I think we both really liked, and it was called Gold, if I remember correctly. Stay Gold. And there were some real amazing highlights on that album that I still go back to. Did we cover that did we cover it as an album club or did we cover album it as a club. New album?
I believe it was album club. It was like a year late. Unfortunately.
Yes. Okay, that makes sense because it was. I thought we covered it as it came out, but we didn't. It's another 2018 album that we covered. We did it in April 2018 and the album came out in 2016. But what a record. Really, really great stuff. And I think this takes more of a backseat right from the off. I think it's definitely a more laid back affair than Stay Gold, but then it's moments that it breaks out of that mold, it breaks out harder and faster. Does that make sense?
Hold on a second. I just gotta let the cat in. Okay. Oh, the cat's coming in anyway. Sorry.
Oh, the cat's coming in, everybody. Yeah,
someone else let him in. Anyway.
Keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, no, this album does a lot of different stuff.
Yeah. Right?
She's wanted to get on different sounds for a while, and this shows it, really.
Yeah. Right? I mean, you know, you're veering in sort of 40 minutes, you're veering from like city pop to future beats to vaporwave to EDM to like
just kind of experiment.
Yeah. So like 80s diva pop to
orchestrations
to soul to garage. Like Bloom is a full on like garage track. It's lo-fi. It's like nearly every song has a different sonic palette, which is kind of wild.
Yeah. I fucking love that. I really do. Some may not like it. I thought you wouldn't. There are some choice kind of effects that the vocals have, which are inconsistent, which is why I say intentionally so. Mm-hmm. Some of the songs kind of serve that purpose. Like just Chilling, for example, kind of just sounds like she put on her phone to record the song, but at least vocally. But she builds upon that to create a certain kind of sonic character to split it away from everything else.
I think just Chilling, do you know what that reminded me of? And maybe it's just the recency effect, but it kind of put me in the mind of Petals for Vases, or sorry, Flowers for Vases, like Hayley Williams.
I totally agree. A lot of these songs kind of do that.
Yeah.
There's a lovelorn lyricism to all of this.
Yeah, it's very love lord.
Yeah, yeah.
It's particularly Let Me Be the One, by the way, which at the start I was like, ooh, she's kind of trying to do like a Mariah or a Whitney type thing, and maybe this is a little bit straight down the track. But then this kind of Joe Hisaishi, like Studio Ghibli style piano kind of comes in, and it's like, oh my god, wow,
very very contemplative and
gorgeous. Yeah,
yeah,
and like there's lots of little surprises, like an apartment. Goes for like a junk, like an M83 junk type thing.
I got exactly
right?
that. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. It's very kind of plucky, Just the Way You Are, and kind of Call You to an extent has kind of a low key Daft Punk meets Second Action.
I literally have written down Second Action.
Yeah, there's kind of
Toshiki Katamatsu, like
an alien stuttery kind of guitar to it. Very underplayed, but very cool.
Yeah, yeah. Second track, Just the Way You Are. Again, like, I did remind me of that Rakia EP, like very laid back, low key, spacey R&B. Uh-huh. Twilight, I will say, I think on paper is an absolute winner in that
it kind of is, right?
It's got that kind of Robin, like that body talk Robin, like arpeggiator. It's sort of a Deadmau5 style side chained.
Yeah,
like,
it's very side chained
EDM.
But that's, I guess, what you think is jarring about it.
For some reason, the production is on that track is not clean enough, and the side chaining is too aggressive. Like, it literally is just like pumping, like, bzz, 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 like every time the kick comes in.
There's a certain kind of wavy synth that is, gets disrupted by the side chain, but it's cool. It does a lot of things right.
And what I wish that track was actually in production was more Deadmau5 and less We All Play Synth. Do you remember that video? Like there was a time back in like 2006, 2007 where every single indie band was like a synth band, and but the production was always bad, and so it reminds me more of like indie bands using synthesizer rather than like a proper producer. But it's mixed bag. But just to kind of take the flip side of that, I think Bloom is another big surprise, and that one is just incredible. Like Bloom
same deal learned from his mistakes almost.
That house beat, it's a garage beat that comes in amazing.
Yeah, kind
and
of a garage
drum bringing beats. In these orchestral samples almost. There's like these kind of soul vocal samples. It kind of goes quite twee and sugary, and then it kind of pulls back into this dark dissonant Aphex Twin section towards the end. It's got a very weird
A lot of different sections,
yeah,
make it like a very complex. Some really cool kind of vaporwave. Mm. Almost the piano reminds me of some chords I heard in the Katamari Damacy video game. Kind of weird jazzy 80s Japanese pop stuff. I love it. That's my jam, dude. And that agrees
for sure.
with me
absolutely.
So much.
Absolutely, yes. And then the last track, Cosmos, is like. It's like lo-fi hip-hop beats to Planet Surf too. Like, it just feels like you're kind of tooling around the galaxy in your spaceship or something.
Yeah, I would say it's close to who's the Disaster Piece, you remember that a musician. Yeah. he did
It Follows, right?
It Follows, and he also did video games like Fez and stuff. Kind of like an 8-bit synth surfing waves.
Yeah,
kind of sound to it, and this definitely kind of captures that surfing the waves of the cosmos thing that Koreans love doing and Korean music loves doing these days, which I can get with, dude.
Yeah, and she has such a lovely. I mean, she just has a great vocal style. Yeah. I think and a vocal
it's
delivery.
It's not like super bombastic, but it just does. And she, as you've seen, like Bloom as well. And Let Me Be the One to an extent. She does some stuff that kind of Grimes captures, like high. Glitchy, falsetto. She can do it.
Yeah, would you say though, like, that this is definitely a more lightweight release than Stay Gold? Like, I feel like this doesn't have quite as much
it
doesn't feel as weighty. It doesn't quite feel as like,
even though it's the same length and song, amount.
Like, I don't think there's anything on this that's as good as All I Want Is You, right?
Oh, I think there is.
Yeah, I think it's too bitty. It feels like a bit. I like it, but this feels to me a bit more like a B-sides collection or like an odds and sods kind of collection. No, whereas Stay Gold was like a pop powerhouse.
I disagree because 5 years have passed in that time.
I know. Yeah, that's why I'm a little bit like. Again, I really like what's on here, but I don't know if there's anything on this apart from maybe Bloom that absolutely like kind of knocks me out in the way some of the tracks off Stay Gold did.
There's a couple songs that she's done between then, but I think it's just, you know, just doing something different completely and utterly. Even if it does sound a little, I think it's because it's a bit more minimalist at points.
Yeah, for sure, it's more minimalist. Yeah,
yeah, it's dealing with a different style of pop that may make it seem like it's. It's not worthless.
No,
it's not worthless either. It's certainly not worthless.
Jesus. No.
Different feels call for a different kind of complexity of songs, and it's more simple. You know, it's not simpler by any stretch. No, actually, it's fucking see that with like Let Me Be the One, which is just fucking orchestrated, dude.
Yeah,
not an easy bit. I think it's just kind of the way it's structured sonically, the way the song listing is, I would have toggled it a bit.
Okay.
Because I think Call You and Just The Way You Are kind of are the same.
Very similar.
Type of song.
Very similar, yeah.
An Apartment is like, whoa. Whoa. It's like one slice of one thing that you don't get a second time in the album, I guess. Which is my only quibble with this. But yeah.
Yeah. It's cool. I really like it. I don't have like a massive amount more to say about it. Like I mean, I will say that my favorite track is Bloom, and that I would give it a 7 out of 10.
Damn. Yes, I agree. Mine is also Bloom. I'm not gonna.
It's great. Try and check it out. Different.
It just is. Yeah. Fucking is. I'm giving this. I'll give this an 8.
Okay. Yeah. No. Climbing absolutely. And I think you were kind of bought into Neon Bunny already. I took a little bit of convincing, but you know, I'm totally on board. I really like this. I just explained. I think it's maybe missing like one or two like more hit, quote unquote, hit singles, but it is really good. It's a good pop album.
It's not quite the hit single kind of album.
No,
once it kind of tries to be, but it's all right. You don't need that really.
No. And definitely a lovely album to put on. You know, just depending on like just kind of relax to. It's nice for that. It's good stuff. Cosmos by Neon Bunny. Right, that brings us to the end of the new releases for the week. So all that's left to do is dial in 1988 into our time machine and step back to talk about Tracy Chapman by Tracy Chapman. So this is maybe a little bit of a curveball. I don't know. It's one of the best-selling albums of all time.
Is this the first Tracy Chapman album?
Yes.
Okay, I would be worried if it wasn't. Like, I'm going to call my third album Tracy Chapman.
Yeah, no. It's definitely in that like folk tradition of like presenting the person as the product, I guess, on the first record. And I think it just it's a real good example of lightning in a bottle, I think, in terms of, you know, Tracy Chapman came from pretty very modest means in Cleveland, Ohio, and just loved music and songwriting, clearly was extremely clued into the social context around her and really just, you know, took a very classic approach that was not that popular in the 80s, you know,
certainly not.
Time of Dayglow and synthesizers and all sorts. And she just followed a different path, I guess.
She almost captured the 90s quicker than the 90s captured itself.
Yeah.
With like the Alanis Morissette and stuff like that.
No, but absolutely. And then you're kind of Elliot Smith and other... like other artists who I can't think of because I don't really listen to them, but there was that kind of like lo-fi resurgence that kind of came through in the 90s, and this would, you know, and this kind of predated that, but at the same time it was kind of seen as it was seen very much as an outlier. So at the time it was seen as throwing back to the 70s, And in retrospect, it was almost kind of looking forward to the 90s as well. But, you know, she just did, you know, she did open mics and she did protest rallies and stuff like that. And she was spotted by a classmate whose father owned a music publishing company. And he just really was like, you need to take her seriously. You really, really, really need to take her seriously.
That's one of the best ways. Yeah. I love that. That sounds like such a genuine way of making it.
Yes, absolutely. And it took a while to get David Kirschenbaum on board, who's the producer, because at the time everybody just wanted to produce, you know, sort of, like I said, like synth pop dance music. And David Kirschenbaum was a guy who'd worked with kind of Bryan Adams and Supertramp and Cat Stevens and Tori Amos, and he was much more along the kind of acoustic line of things, and it just seemed like a match made in heaven, because, you know, the production is, it's really clean. I mean, it's like, it's squeaky clean on this record.
Yeah, like seal clean almost.
Seal clean. Yeah. and you know, for all the reviewers talk about it sounding like an album from the 70s, you've still got a lot of those kind of PS1 synthesizers, and the drum tone is very like Phil Collins and
Dave Gray.
There's lots on this that marks it out as a Reagan era album, and certainly lyrically. Okay. Lyrically,
oh,
you know,
God. Off the things,
yeah, she's taken aim at in the lyrics, which are, I think, and I'll let you speak now, but lyrically, as much as Tracy Chapman is spoken about as a protest singer and how social themes are the main sort of the main focus of her lyrics, I would say only about half of these songs are political. I think the other half are deeply personal, and it makes for a really nice balance.
Exactly.
So Dylan, what did you think?
Totally. I kind of like this. I don't love it. Mm-hmm. It's not my exact cup of tea.
Okay.
From that era of stuff, when I was probably more into what would I take from this? Aside from different genres where I was totally in the Def Leppard.
Like, this is like Guns N' Roses kind of time, you know?
Yeah, it's totally that. When a lot of those bands were losing their touch. R.E.M. would be my slice of something like this. And of course, Dave Gray. David Gray, for sure.
Yeah, he came along so much later, but yes, absolutely, I hear it.
Same vibe. I really like how the personal clashes with the political in this.
Yeah.
They're essential to each other to make these songs work.
Yeah.
And I like a lot of how I like it more as it goes along. Because the first songs I have heard hundreds of times, like Fast Car and Talking About a Revolution. I've heard them so much. Talking About a Revolution, I hadn't heard as much actually. Classics.
They are classics.
Even for people who don't even know who Tracy Chapman is.
Yeah.
But you've heard it.
Yeah.
You've heard it in a pub somewhere, probably.
Yeah.
So, covered the exact same way. it's almost like this song's so good you can't touch it in any other way.
Yeah.
Or else it'll sound inauthentic. And that's a form of beauty to that untouchability in a cover.
Well, speaking of covers, because I have to bring this up, this is shameful, right? Shameful. I had never heard the Tracy Chapman version of "Baby Can I Hold You," but I guarantee I went. You know, I was like talking to my dad yesterday. And I said I sang a little line. And I says, "Who sings that song?" And he goes, "Boyzone." And I was like, "Oh God, yes." It is so tragic that for the majority of people in Ireland, the version of "Baby Can I Hold You" that we know was sung by five mediocre white men, when the song was written by Tracy Chapman and performed in a far superior fashion by Tracy Chapman.
Far superior. Far more genuine sounding.
"Baby Can I Hold You," God damn you, Louis Walsh, for for picking out that song from this really important album of important themes. It's a gorgeous song. I understand why he did it, but geez, I will never get over the fact that I used to know the Boyzone version as the sort of be all end all of that song.
There's truly a strength in the minimalism that doesn't need to be changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or built upon, at least, like in that manner.
Did you get anything out of interest? Because I know Talking About a Revolution and Fast Car are the massive songs, right? But did you get anything out of listening to them with a studied ear, or like to really concentrating on them? Because I did.
I absolutely listened to it. And it just is so much essential space. right. I love, I think it's finger picking. So at least when I see it played, It's a form of kind of finger picking.
It's sort of in that Blackbird or Iris but the Goo Goo Dolls kind of tradition. Simon and Garfunkel,
It slides very nicely down the ear canal, I guess. It glides with the lyrics. The vocals kind of have that. What's that? Not a ramble, but kind of the jazzy spoken wordness that kind of came into the 90s. Almost like dance. There's a lot of like 90s dance that kind of had this kind of scene. Which is weird how that went every genre.
As a trip hop thing, I guess.
It's just very warm. It's a very warm album.
No, it really is. And she is mixed so high. I mean, every time this album would come on after something else, I'd have to like, oh gosh, because the music would come in, but then her voice is pushed so far to the front of the mix, which is great because it's a stunning voice, and I think it's a really interesting thing that she does, which is I think she takes the best elements of like say a country voice,
yes,
but in terms of the vibrato and everything like that, but it comes from such a deep well of like soul and emotion.
It's kind of like the good I get from the vibrato with Maximo Park. Brings a sincerity, a kind of a wavering sincerity to this that I love.
She's speaking from so much personal experience, and you can really tell she's put her heart and soul into everything.
Very, very methodical, intentional placement of where the vocals go. It really takes its time. I love it.
I genuinely
love it. If I clear my mind of the thousands of other times I've heard it by so-and-so cover artists.
Because I think it does bear like really considering, you know, what she's singing about on those two songs as well. Like, I think Talk About a Revolution, like, you know, it's kind of a familiar Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen type thing, but you know, something, you know, those people that are killing time in the unemployment lines and waiting for their welfare checks and stuff like that, you know, it really does paint a picture of that time. It was a very dark time in America, and then Fast Car, again, it really captures that situation of always feeling trapped in your own life. What's happening.
This album kind of flips your expectations, your rose-tinted expectations of what the 80s were like.
Definitely.
This is what they're actually like for a lot of people.
This is not Stranger Things, right? You know, you're talking about she on Across the Lines, like, she just blankly, she's like, there is a line, the white people live on one side, the black people live on the other side.
And there was a romance here, a lovelorn romance here, of not just like platonic relations, or just general platonic relationships, not just a romantic lover, but lovelorn of the times that could be without Reagan. There's really cool twists on that.
And it's sort of tragic how much of the lyrical content on songs like Across the Lines or Why is relevant, like, right today. Up to today. I mean, you know,
it's today almost.
Or Behind the Wall as well, which reminds me of like Raglan Road or something. You know, it sounds like an a cappella Irish ballad, just, you know, Shan Noe's style. No music, just like really powerful words about, you know, it's domestic violence, the police are absolutely useless, probably because they're on the wrong side of town. And you know, the police will only show up to keep the peace once the poor woman has been killed. Yes, and
exactly.
And why there's a line, you know, why is a woman still not safe when she's in her home? And I think that's lines like that, definitely, particularly on a week like this with Sarah Everett in London, and that dreadful case that's happening at the moment, has really brought like women's lack of safety in public spaces and in private spaces. It's under like the microscope.
It's a tangent on it. It's like this always gets pushed to the front, and it always gets pushed back almost a week later. Just because a lot of people don't give a shit, unfortunately. It's very accurate to these times.
And the decision makers generally seem to be men, and they just, you know, it's an excuse to say some nice words and then do nothing. And to think that, you know, somewhere halfway across the world, 30 years ago, or how long is 1988? Is it 88?
Getting up there. It's getting up there, dude.
Yeah. It's
33.
Like over 33. Yeah, 33 years ago. Like, it's, you know, these issues of whether it's race or whether it's, you know, violence against women or whatever it is, like, it all doesn't seem to have made a huge amount of progress, and that is quite sad. But she also, as I say, she also does, like you mentioned, she leans into more personal issues. Baby, Can I Hold You?
Yeah.
Mountains of Things is kind of a, like, her, I guess, personal aspirations over what sounds like a Zamfir panpipe extravaganza.
That's a very Hathaway kind of 90s thing that I love. I love that became a thing.
Get Zamfir's 6 CD collection. I was like, oh, this is great. Yeah. That's the PS1. That's the PS1 vibes I get on that song.
I always thought that was Genesis the band.
Oh, maybe Genesis. Yeah.
Or like the Sledgehammer pan flute style.
and I think, yeah, For My Lover is another one. Just lovely use of chords. I mean, her acoustic guitar on this record is just, it's never quite what you expect. No. Really nice.
It's in service of the vocals.
Yeah,
almost entirely. Yeah. Decorates the vocals. What's the word? Whatever.
Accentuates them. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely. For You is another example. That's really simple. Just her acoustic guitar. Just a showcase for her voice. You know. I really like this. I'm actually was pleasantly surprised by how much outside of the songs that everybody knows, how much there was to kind of.
There's a lot more to like. Even if I'm like, I'm okay about this. Like, it's a casual album listen for me. Yeah. I'd probably only listen to it once, to be honest.
You only listen to it once?
No. I'd probably only listen to it once more. Like, this turn of listens, right?
I would be like, talk to me after class.
No. I gave this a good few shakes.
No, good.
To get familiar with it. But I don't think my taste would return to it too much, but I really love it for what it is.
Yeah, and what it represents, it really was a cultural moment. This album, I mean, it's, you know, it's sold like over 6 million copies just in the US, and it was, you know, it was number one.
I'm not surprised.
Austria, New Zealand, Sweden, Denmark, UK. I mean,
it speaks to people.
Cultural moment
on a very sit down here, listen to this,
yeah,
a level, it speaks to everyone.
Yeah, absolutely, it does. I think it has something to say, and it has something to say, and it says it really well. And I think, you know, there's a lot more musically going on than people might realize. I mean, you know, the session drummer who worked on Why, Danny Fonheiser, I think that's some great drumming on that song, like really good, and the guitar throughout has fun little sort of little solos and moments.
The solos are really nice. You know, I like those Vi kind of solos.
For My Lover, the harmonica solo.
That's what nice. I come for. That's what I go what back I to for. That era for.
That's what I stay for.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there's a lot more to this than meets the eye. And I personally had a lovely time with it because we all knew that Tracy Chapman had an incredible voice. From what I understand, her career maybe slightly stagnated after this, in terms of that it seems to be accepted that even though she had strong material on subsequent albums, she never quite stepped out of that comfort zone to deliver like an evolution on this sound.
The scroll of releases seems to be pretty consistent, right? Up to 2008. Was the last one? Whoa,
the last one's 08. Yeah. So she hasn't released anything, and maybe she's due a comeback that's gonna knock us all for six. I have no idea.
We've seen a few albums like that recently.
Yeah, right. We have indeed.
Festival Bolt Cutters and stuff and all that.
Yes. Yeah. That album grows on me with every listen.
Yeah.
For sure, and it is a very confrontational record. But yeah, I got a lot of value out of this. I got a really good time with this, and I think it's probably going to be one that goes into my regular rotation. To be honest,
fair.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of new stuff to get to my rotation, but I have patience for this. I totally do.
Definitely. Yeah. So that's Tracy Chapman. But Tracy Chapman, what is your favorite song, Dylan? Out of interest,
It's probably If Not Now.
If Not Now, it's a good song. Lovely piano on that song.
Mm-hmm. The piano, I love it.
Mm. It's definitely not She's Got a Ticket for me. We all know how I feel about reggae, right?
Okay, yeah, that would be my second.
But yeah. Don't give me some reggae. But
give me some reggae.
No. My favorite song is probably, oh gosh, probably Why. Yeah.
Why? Actually, my favorite song's the reggae one. She got a joke.
Oh, yeah, God.
It's up there as
you
well.
You disgust me. Okay.
I'm here for it all.
Yeah. Great stuff. So that's Tracy Chapman with Tracy Chapman. Definitely check it out. I'm sure you already have. It's three of the songs are like international radio smashers. And thank you very much for joining us this week.
Thanks.
It was good fun, Dil.
I appreciate it.
Interesting,
nice emotional bolster.
Smorgasbord of albums. In the meantime, if you do want to get in touch, we're on all of the socials as Kill Shuffle. You can also search us on Spotify and find our playlist we use to do our listening for the show, and you can also find the show there as well. But I think now is a good time to sign off. Look after yourselves out there, you know, keep distant from each other, but stay close.
Stay toasty.
Bye.